Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
Getting back to COVID-19, and I suppose it's on everybody's lips. We keep talking about it. It's the topic of conversation. Bill Tormley is the editor-in-chief of the Irish Journal of Medical Science. His also speciality is chemical pathology, biochemical toxicology, and he works in Beaumont Hospital. Good afternoon to you, Bill. How are you?
Hello, Niall. How are you?
A very colourful character. I saw you in prime time last week, and I know you were so anxious to get out what you had to say, Bill, but you didn't obviously get enough time to say it. So I want to give you that opportunity now to continue to talk about what you were actually talking about. And this is in regards to what a lot of people are saying is a sledgehammer to crack a nut. Is the cure, i.e. restrictions, lockdowns and the changes in our lifestyle, worse than the actual virus?
It might be. The problem is, it might be, Niall. And by the way, would you put 1,000 of emails in there so I can get the prize?
would you like that? Yeah. I'm sure Lions of Limerick would be delighted to give you a nice Jaguar.
Anyway, look, the situation here is that we have this NFET crowd since last March telling us how to live our lives on a day-by-day basis. And they are often just simply either absurd or wrong or both. And that's a bit of a problem.
Would it be fair to say that they're right? They're right now and again. Would that be fair to say too?
Well, I suppose if you do things often enough, you have to be right every now and again. That's right. If you go back and look at where we were in July, for example, we had very low numbers. The problem with all that stuff about low numbers is that we don't really know if that's true.
Are you basing that on PCR testing when you're talking about PCR testing? So do you have doubts about PCR testing?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay.
Well, I do have doubts in the sense that there was an experiment done in Beaumont by ENT and by infectious diseases. And what they did is Peter Lacey and Owen De Barra, and they brought a mannequin down outside the restaurant. Wait to hear this one now. And they got the staff, that's medics, NTHEs and nurses, to go and poke the mannequin to test them for COVID. And they had this thing set up electronically so that if you hit the right place to test, it went ping. And if you didn't, nothing happened. And something like 60% of the people hit the wrong place and did not get a positive sample. Isn't that just incredible?
So in other words, human error just in taking the test.
So, yes, pre-analytical error in taking the test.
What about the argument in relation to PCR? Well, if I just go back to the PCR, the argument that sometimes there's a 1 or 2% false positive, which would be on the amount of tests we do. So we do 100,000 tests a week.
I'm getting to that, okay. I tell you. What you do in the lab then is you amplify the RNA, and you get it to rev up. In other words, you put in an enzyme and you make this stuff reproduce. And if you have to do 30-something cycles to actually see a positive, it's probable that that's a false positive.
But didn't Killian de Gascon say we were doing 35 to 40?
Yeah, if you do that, you're getting a load of false positives. If you get positives at low cycles, it's definitely positive. There's no question at all about that.
Well, and you know what? This wouldn't be an issue. It wouldn't be an issue, Bill, if we weren't dictating public policy on it. But we are dictating public policy.
Yeah, I couldn't give a damn if they were actually not being ridiculous on the other end. For example, the HSE this week, Niall, says that 2,000 people had cancers missed as a result of the close down of the hospitals to deal with COVID. Do you remember the hospitals were in a total panic?
That's right.
And the place, I mean, for example, in Beaumont, I think it maxed out at approximately 150-something people in the hospital, which was the highest in the country. Now, the good thing about Beaumont is, and the reason I keep blowing the trumpet for Beaumont is, then the survival rate, or the death rate, sorry, to turn around the other way, the death rate of COVID-19 patients in ICU in Beaumont is between 11 and 14%, which is phenomenal. Because in a lot of countries in the world, it's 40-something percent. So the ICU.
And by the way, can I
phenomenal.
Okay, can I just point out as well for listeners listening, when you talk about 14% death rate, this is in relation to people who've already been admitted, who are already on a risk factor anyway. So this is not an overall infection fatality rate, of course. Yeah, okay.
No.
Yeah, just in case people pick that up wrong.
No. Okay,
okay, so, but in relation to the, to
exactly
the virus itself.
No, wait till I tell you, exactly as you've just told your listeners, that's a rate on people who are so bad that they finish up in ICU, and that's a very small number of people.
Yes, of course. Okay. So just to get in relation to the fatality rate of COVID-19, we see now from data around the world, we're in a much better position than we were back in March when we thought, according to the WHO and Sam McConkie and everybody else, that 5% of the population were going to drop dead, right? That was the kind of suggestion at the time.
Too seriously.
Yeah, well, okay. But that was the suggestion at the time. That was obviously very wrong. Now we have the data. We're 8 months, 9 months in. And we see fatality rates for those under the age of 65 are probably less than influenza. For those of us over 65, slightly higher than influenza. So are we overreacting then to this particular virus? And if we are, why are we doing this worldwide, not just here in Ireland?
Because there seems to be a black and Asian preponderance of deaths in this. In other words, it depends on your genes. That's what it appears to be. In other words, if you're white and wealthy, you have a much higher survival rate than if you're black. And that's a real problem.
Well, statistically, they have said this, that Asian and black people seem to have a higher fatality rate, yes.
Yeah.
But that could be due to family circumstances too, but you go on.
No, not yet. It seems to be genetic. In other words, it seems to be this storm that happens, the inflammatory storm. That's really what it seems to be. And that's a really difficult situation, to be quite frank.
Mm-hmm. So the
British Medical Journal this week has published the Spanish figures for the different age groups, and it's really revs up big time after 60. That's what it amounts to, and that's the same as the report from Wuhan in China, published on the 17th of December last, from the Chinese CDC, and the report from Northern Italy, Lombardy, around the same time, Niall. So there's nothing new in all of this except hype. If you look at what happened in the Republic, these geniuses, Mr. Holohan and company, didn't seem to notice the nursing homes for quite a while, which suggests that they didn't read the reports with the CDC in China or in Lombardy. They didn't notice the meat factories, despite what was going on around the country. They allowed the coroners to close down inquests and post-mortem so that they couldn't determine whether people were dying from COVID or of COVID, with COVID at the same time, if you get what I'm saying. In other words, was COVID a coincidence?
Mm-hmm.
Because the overall death rate did not shift. And it seems to be that one of the things we've actually done, according to the HSE this week, is that we had 2,000 people with cancers undiagnosed as a consequence of the close down of COVID. And that's pretty serious.
Well, I read a shocking story of a woman during the week in a paper who had to go to Northern Ireland just to get her cancer diagnosed because she had her appointments cancelled so many times down here.
Well, there's a load of that. I was talking to a friend of mine who happens to be one of the top guys in Cork University Hospital, and he said to me in July, after I wrote a piece, a 4,000-word piece in the Daily Mail or the Mail on Sunday, that it's about time somebody called these guys out, because their experience in Cork was that people's cancers had progressed because they were too afraid to go near a hospital.
Okay, well, you agree with probably me and many other people that the unquantifiable deaths related to non-COVID, in other words, those people who don't get cancer diagnosis or people who become obese or people who turn to alcoholism during this particular tough time in their lives, in the long term, their lives may be shortened. So there's an unquantifiable amount of deaths related to COVID-19, unrelated, if you know what I mean, to COVID-19.
Yeah, well, the only thing you can say is that the Office of, as I said this on television, The Office of National Statistics, the ONS, in England, stated that there was a 55% increase in the numbers of people who died from coronaries at home or in the street, sudden deaths, during the COVID period, because they were too scared. I presume the inference is that they were too scared to go to
the doctor, when they felt first symptoms, of course.
Exactly.
Okay. Can I ask you, by the way,
to see how blatant this is, Niall?
Yeah.
Think about this. How many trolley crises are you hearing about from the Irish Nurses Organisation at the moment?
Well, none.
None, exactly. If you go down the corridor, there's no big pile-up of
So what are you saying? The people are paying the price for a badly run health service over the years. I mean, look, we've had this problem for 30 years. No reflection on you, Bill, but we've had Arbo Mount.
The only thing you have to keep in mind is this, that the population is increasing by about 25,000 people a year.
But the healthcare system is not. Okay, but getting back to what you said about ICU a few minutes ago and your experience of people in ICU, and you talked about the 14%.
According to Spain in the community, the overall fatality date published in the British Medical Journal is 0.8%, believe it or not.
Okay,
0.8%.
Okay, we have asked the HSE and the Freedom of Information for figures that we can't seem to get from them. They keep directing us to their website, which doesn't give us the actual details we're looking for. Yeah. When we talk about, say, 250 people hospitalised...
Can I say something about this just for a second, Niall? Sorry, I just want to say something. The infection fatality rate over the age of 50 is about 11.6%. And in men over 80... It zips up even more to 16.4%, all right? So if the overall rate is 1.1%, can you just imagine...
Is it that low high? Is it really that high? According to the CDC and many others, it's a lot lower than that.
No, hold on. If you add in the elderly who have a high death rate and to the people who have virtually no death rate, it comes out as 1.1, okay? If you exclude the people above 60, it's very low.
Okay, well,
0-something%.
Well, unfortunately, we don't exclude the people over 60. Let me get back to the ICU, and it's an important question.
The reason I'm saying that is because if you look at the absurdity of what they're doing in colleges, etc., that's the point I'm making.
Oh, no, absolutely, yes. There's very little risk to anybody under the age, thankfully, that age.
Exactly,
okay, but I want to come back to the ICU, if I possibly can, Bill, we've asked the HSE for figures, to clarify figures. So when we talk on a daily basis about 250 people in hospital, for example, and, say, 35 people in ICU around the country, right?
Yeah.
Can you clarify? Because they don't seem to be able to clarify.
I don't know, but just from
your own observations, right? Because you talked about ICU a minute ago. The people that are in ICU or in hospital, what percentage do you believe, from your own observations, you don't have to give me an exact percentage, but majority or minority or whatever, what percentage of those are actually in ICU and actually in hospital for COVID-19, or are they in hospital for another reason, like I broke my leg or I'm in for dialysis,
I just happen
to test positive?
No, the ones who, it's not like that. The ones who test positive and are brought in for COVID symptoms are the COVID score in the particular hospital.
So when they say, on 6 o'clock on the news, there's 250 people hospitalised because of COVID-19, are we to take those 250 people are only there for COVID-19? Because we have been indications that only a small percentage are only for COVID-19.
No, they're there for COVID-19, and that's spread all over the country.
Okay,
and I think it's very low, because I was talking to a guy in Blanchardstown who's the director of medicine out there about a week ago, and there was only 4 people in Blanche with COVID-19.
You've given out about Tony Holohan and you've given out about Neffet, and I wouldn't disagree with you about Neffet. I believe it's a groupthink at this stage and needs to be replaced or changed. Everybody, I think, thinks the same thing. Mind you, their task is simply to give medical advice, not to give economical advice and social advice. But what would you do? So I'm going to put you in a position, Bill Tormley. You're now the Taoiseach, right? I can only imagine. You're the Taoiseach, Bill, and you have to make the decisions tomorrow. What would you do?
What would I do right now?
Yeah.
There's no right answer now, and I tell you why. That's not a duck, Niall. I don't duck. I'll answer that. The problem now is that we've actually gone too far with infections. For example, yesterday in one of the papers, it said that there was 160,000 people coming in through the ports in October. 160,000. And they said, and they listed out where they're from, Poland, Spain, all that kind of stuff, and 50,000 from the UK. Without testing and retesting in 5 days, or testing 5 days beforehand and retesting at the airport, we do not know how many asymptomatic people have been brought in.
But they're saying that's only 3% of the total infection rate coming into the country.
I'll deal with that one. Yeah. That comment is based on antibodies, and not every COVID patient gets antibodies. The other thing about it is that in Iceland, which is a small, self-contained island, the genetics company up there did a random study of looking at the population for COVID. And then of the ones who had, and they took a history off everybody. In other words, you had to fill in where you've been, what your job was, all that kind of stuff, what age you are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And guess what, Niall? 50% of the people who tested positive, PCR positive, for COVID had no symptoms. 50% in Iceland.
Well, that seems to be the case replicated all over the world, that the majority, it seems, of people who test positive have no symptoms. Is it time, Bill, like some countries are doing, to stop testing healthy people and only test people who present with symptoms?
Well, there's two ways you could look at that. No is the answer to that, because at the moment, with all of these vaccines coming down the track,
it's probably
worth having a go at suppressing this. Because it's not clear from the literature how bad the post-COVID syndrome is. Now, keep in mind that we had post-viral fatigue syndromes going on for...
Well, we did, with influenza and many others, people would have long... Yes. I mean, long COVID is just a name given to, you know, something that we've, you know, a diagnosis we've had for years with many other viruses. And
exactly.
By the way...
The only difference is, Niall, if I can just slightly... I'm not correcting you, but just add a nuance onto that. One of the problems about COVID is that it affects the coagulation system. So you can have strokes and coronaries and all sorts of stuff from COVID, okay, which is a little bit, it's a bit nasty. It's definitely nastier than the flu.
There's no doubt about that, okay? In relation to, we also asked the HSE last week under FOI, how many cases of flu we've had in hospital this year. Now, we'd normally
there's
be getting...
very few, actually.
Well, hang on. You'd be very surprised at the answer I got back. We would normally be in the thick of flu season now. We'd be getting right up there. Because this time last year in the Irish Examiner, I remember reading an article that we had thousands of people in hospital and we had, I think, 400 or 500 in ICU over a period of time, right? And we had many hundreds of deaths in this country every single year for flu.
That's right.
Okay, but this year, how many do you think we've had? According to the HSC, none. Not one solitary case. Is it a case that people with flu symptoms are equally testing positive for COVID and being redefined as COVID, and people seem to think that's the case because the flu couldn't miraculously have just disappeared?
Well, no, hold on. We're not defining anybody with COVID if they don't have it.
No, I'm not suggesting, but what I'm saying is people who present with flu are being tested for COVID.
Yes, they are. But the point I'm making is that if people who are admitted to hospital do have a positive COVID, the only thing we don't know is how many cycles it's taken routinely to actually diagnose this. In other words, how many false positives there are around the place? Because we don't. No, they don't publish the data.
But we never mass, even though we had influenza before, and we sadly lost a lot of lives through it, we never mass tested for influenza. So we didn't really know.
No, hold on for a second. This virus is worse, it appears.
Absolutely. I'm not doubting that for a minute, but what I'm saying is it does seem miraculous that we don't have a single case of the flu, according to the HSE, this year. It's miraculous.
There's ascertainment bias, Niall. If you go and you check, if you go into primary care and you go and check everybody and you do a flu analysis, right, you'll get a lot more than one. There are people around with flu.
Okay. Well, according to the HSC, they're not, but I mean... You know.
Yeah, hold on for a second. That's defined and reported to the HSE, which requires two steps. One, test for it, and two, report to the HSE. And they're using sentinel GPs, and it was a whole bunch of GPs who were joined together to report to the HSE as, the good boys in the game.
Okay, well, finally, I want to get to the vaccines because I know you're a busy man, Bill, and I appreciate you coming on the air today. As you know, the UK...
I follow you on Twitter, so I see what you're at.
Okay, all right. The UK have formally approved the vaccine. This is the Pfizer vaccine, the first country, so it should be rolled out to healthcare workers within the next week and a half to 2 weeks, right? Mm. This particular vaccine, I think it's one of the first, what they call mRNA vaccines. The reason for that is because we don't have a live sample of COVID-19 to make a live vaccine. But, I mean... there seems to be a lot of reluctance.
Oh, we do, actually. We've taken the spike protein and that's what we're using to generate...
Well, I was only reading or listening to in Parliament last night in the UK, and the suggestion was that we don't have an actual sample of the actual virus itself.
Oh,
anyway.
We do, sure. That's what they're using to generate, to take out the... RNA fingerprint has been worked out. In other words, the Chinese actually gave the RNA and virus out in the sequences of the whole thing way back.
We're getting to the vaccine because I don't have much time, but in relation to the vaccine, normally we will always have the anti-vaccination people. They've been around for years and they'll be around for the next God knows how many years, right?
Yeah.
But this time round, there is a much higher reluctance. Normally, the anti-vax would be represented about 15% of people, right? We're now looking at, you know, according to surveys, both on my own Twitter, Irish Times, yeah, everybody else, there's a quite high reluctance of people. Ah, I'm normally pro-vaccine, but I don't know, this is a bit rushed. I think I'll wait a few months and see what happens to everybody else, if they all die first. So and then you have the government, of course. Stephen Donnelly has just indemnified Pfizer. The state has indemnified them, you know, against anybody being suing them at a later date for side effects, which doesn't send out a very good message, a positive message. So, I mean, why do you believe people are so reluctant? And are they right to be reluctant?
Well, the first thing is people are sceptical about the effects of a virus or of a vaccine until such time as it's in circulation for long enough to find anything very rare. That's the first thing I want to say.
Yeah, phase four, so to speak, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's down to millions of people as opposed to tens of thousands tested in phase three. That's the first thing I want to say. The second thing is that these are new. The Moderna virus and the Pfizer virus, or mRNA viruses, as you've just said, Niall, and that's a new construction of a vaccine. So that has not been used before. So that will be very interesting to see how that works, because it's got problems. We have we don't have a HIV virus or a vaccine. We don't have a malaria vaccine. There's all sorts of possibilities from that new technology. All the other vaccines that are going through phase threes, as far as I know, plus the ones in China, and the one in the Sputnik 5 in Russia. You people forget about
Sputnik 5, yeah, aptly named. Yeah, I know.
You have to, we have Sputnik 5. The 98 listeners updated on these things. They actually apparently all work, but we're so arrogant in the West that if something comes out of Russia and China, it's tainted, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're being ignored. But the problem with this, as you've just come, Pfizer one, is that all the other ones are modifications of a cold virus, an adenovirus that causes common cold, and they're going to be given directly. So they're a live virus, a modified live virus that includes the spike protein of the COVID-19. In other words, a bit of the COVID virus is going into these things, and that's going to.
So you produce antigens, yes, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, antibodies, yeah. Yeah. So that's basically that. That's exactly what that does. The other problem, as I see it, for vaccines at the moment is that we're going to give it to a whole lot of people who already have antibodies, so they're probably going to get a sore arm big time. And other than Johnson & Johnson, which is a one-shot vaccine, which isn't out yet, all the others are a two-shot vaccine.
So you just go back 3 weeks later and get a bit of a boost.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but I mean, if there's a reluctance, finally, Bill, I have to wrap it up, but if there is a reluctance, I mean, we've always talked about vaccines in the past, HPV and all the rest of them, and we always say, look, we need to get up to about 85% to get some sort of level of herd immunity. Now, we know there's already a level of immunity with T-cells. We know there's a level of immunity possibly with people who've already got it. So we may only have to get a little bit more to get us up to that level of herd immunity. But if we don't have enough people taking it, the whole thing is going to be pointless, and we're stuck in this rut, aren't we?
Yeah, let's pretend that 70% get it. Can we for a second?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. And then let's pretend that it's somewhere like 90% efficacious, all right?
Yeah.
0.9 by 7, right, is 0.63, all right? So that means that we're going to have 37% who are not covered. Are you with me?
Yes, yeah, I'm with you.
Who could get it. So this is a bit of a long shot. It's going to take a while for all of this to work its way
okay,
out.
And in that while that we're talking about, we keep going along and locking down businesses
I think we've got to stop all that.
Okay, so the point is we've got to learn to live with the virus. Finally, one more question before you go, Bill, because I have to go into an ad break. It looks like the Irish Aviation Authority are now looking at linking people's passports up possibly with their vaccinations. Qantas have already announced they won't let people fly without the vaccinations. I'm seeing a future where you're not going to be able to go to a gig without showing your vaccination passport.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a Jerry Breen was telling me that there's some app that actually will do all of that.
That's right. Well, in the UK, that's what they're doing. They're linking it with the app. Okay, do you agree with that? Which is essentially mandatory vaccination. Otherwise, you'd be treated as a second-class citizen. Do you agree with it?
I think that the public health consequences of the way we're approaching this at the moment is so massive that we have to do it. That's what I think. I'm a civil libertarian, and I realise that there are consequences if you don't do it. For example, if you don't do certain vaccines, you can't work in a creche. right? And if you don't give your kid MMR, you get outbreaks of these things, you know, whooping cough and that sort of stuff. And the effects are pretty grim if you get the central nervous system consequences. It's not funny.
Okay, so okay, all right, I get what you're saying. Okay, so you think just look to save everybody else and to obviously save the lives of the vulnerable people who would be vulnerable to COVID-19. It's best everybody just does their civic duty.
Yeah, I don't think there's any other game in town, basically.
All right, listen, Bill, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on the air today. Bill Tormley, Editor-in-Chief of the Irish Journal of Medical Science and also practising at Beaumont Hospital. Thank you very much. Now, Noel, you keep playing it down. How come by May, 16,000 people had died in Lombardy region of Italy, says Mike. Ask Bill who will win the cup on Sunday. I didn't ask him that, but probably I should have. I don't know. The flu is being covered up so they can put it down to COVID-19. Like every other illness, nobody should trust the HSE as they are not... I don't know what that means. I'm assuming it's capable. Capable of looking after a teddy bear's picnic. Never mind a health service that has been on its knees for years. I wouldn't disagree completely with everything you've just said there, by the way.